second.
Go. So I look, and it's incredible, and they're all in their little matrix tubes. They're all plugged in. They're all in their little screen. So I turned to the flight attendant and said, "Man, it looks like the Matrix out there." So she giggles. And so then I go back and I start playing around and saying, well, what do they got here? Probably got a couple of movies. They got a contemporary Hollywood, blah, blah, avant-garde. They got all these categories. And so I click on avant-garde and there's I'm Not There. Oh. I say, hey, I got to see this. Because I'd done the fucking my commentary on the movie before I saw it through you here in December, right? So, based on an interview with Todd Haynes right. when I was here in December. So I watch it. It is unbelievable. I said, this is worthy of Bob commentary. I mean, this is, there's a lot of stuff in that. Yeah. So that's really good. Now, the problem is they conk out. It conks out or something. You rewind it, knocks it off. So I go back and I said, can you fix the, I said, no, actually I went back later and I said, this is really good, good movie. She said, yeah, it's really good if it works, when it's working. It's really good when it's working. So I just ignored that. And then I went back and I'm watching and then it conked out. And I'm waiting. And I asked I might ask the flight attendant, or I was going to, and all of a sudden it popped back on again after about 10 minutes, started going. So I watched it, and I was a bit more careful, but I screwed up again and went off. So I asked the flight attendant if she could fix it. No, I waited for it to flip on again, but it didn't. So 20 minutes later, it's not going to come on. I asked her, she said, well, I'll get to it. She never got to it, and then we landed. So I never got to watch some
the whole thing.
I saw the whole thing, but I wanted to review it.
Oh.
And I was trying to review it, and that's what, rewinding was screwing it up.
I see.
You know, breaking it. And I found out from Sue, she says, these things are drivers. Sue is a flight attendant on Air Canada. She says, this hell with this new technology. It's always breaking. They always have to go and reset it. They have to bend down underneath. In other words, this new technology is wonderful for the passengers, but it's hell. More and more work and inner nuisance and headaches for them. Nobody cares about them, right?
Right.
So I get off the two customs. It's like 7 in the morning. I get the subway, and I'm there on the London subway, which are odd because they're like little coaches. Have you been to London?
I haven't. I've been to London, but not on the subway.
Subway. It's little chairs and seats. It's not like New York. It's just a flat thing. You get a lot of people. This is like everybody's got their own little coffee holder and you know, a little comfortable thing. But I'm watching all these people. It's early morning, so the deadheads are going to work. You know, so I'm watching this work scene. So I get to Ben's place. And I can't figure out what's going on because it's 21 Crowndale Court. And I'm looking, well, there's Crowndale Court, but where's 21 Crowndale Court?
Right.
So I go across the street, and the guy says, no, no, 21 refers to each apartment. So when someone tells you the 21 Crowndale,
it's not
the building is Crowndale Court, and then they're telling you the apartment number.
Gotcha.
It's not the building number. So I think I called him. I can't remember if I called him or not to see if he was up, and he was. So I went over and I pressed it, and the door opens. He's on the first floor, and there he is in his bathrobe. So we go in, and we start talking.
First time you ever met him? First.
Yeah, yeah. I never talked to him.
Is his kid and wife there?
Yeah, yeah. They come out a little later. I think she's nursing Mordecai, who is about 8 days old.
Wow! And the other one's how old?
Iris, 2 years old. She's a little live wire. She comes in, she's yakking.
And is it a junkie? Of millions of things everywhere?
Oh, yeah. It's like your place. But he's got a lot of those little 45 things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whole shelves of the little things.
Yeah.
Singles.
Yeah.
And really old stuff. And lots of books and video. It's like this.
Right.
And so we get talking. Eventually Esther comes in. And
looks cute or...
Yeah, right. Yeah. And Esther's a nice person.
Yeah.
And, but...
She's Benjamin freak.
Yes.
Still?
Yeah. And she's nursing Mordecai.
Right.
But she didn't come in until later. Me and Ben, we start talking, right? All I know from Ben is he told you once, and he said, I'm an autodidact. You remember that?
Is that what he said?
Yeah, when he read it, Entertainment Sucks or something, back in the early 93, 94. So we get talking. After a couple hours, he jumps up and he says, man, this is like Danny Houston. Do you know who Danny Houston is?
Yeah, John Huston's son?
No, that's what this other film guy thought. Oh. Who was that? It's a film critic.
Right.
Oh, yeah, Kevin Currier did The Dangerous Kitchen
right.
when I'm telling about this. He goes, they think it's not. No, no. Danny Houston is Ben's hero. He met Danny when he was at Cambridge. He's a Zappa nut. He writes about him at Zappa Academy.
Okay.
He's a guy who would see, I guess, coincidence or things going on in the world related to Zappa albums, which is like me, right?
Yeah.
And he said Danny had just had great fun being with him. he's a catalyst of all my Zappa mania because he would just make it lively, the meaning of Zappa's albums and reality. So he said, you're like Danny Houston, it's all coming back. So I was giving him a Danny Houston experience. So he liked that, right? Good. So we talk all day long. Then we go get his daughter, Iris, and get her out of that place. Then we go over to Bloomsbury Group area, Tavistock Square, where Virginia Woolf and all them live. That's near where they live. He's in Summerstown. It's called Summerstown. And so we do that, and then we go, maybe he had a drink, and then we go back to his place and talk, and then we're going to go see Gamma, because Gamma's going to put me up that night.
Yeah.
So we go over to Gamma's girlfriend where he hangs out, and we're with him for a while, and that's fun. And then we go over to Martian Embassy. So we walk over to the Martian Embassy, where I'm going to stay. So you walk in, and it's just like this, but he's got wall-to-wall, that kind of collage there.
Yeah.
He's got all over the place, major collage work. And let's see. So we end up talking all night until about 3 in the morning. And they're drinking. 3 days later, Ben tells me that he got depressed at the end of our talk. He was all elated, but at the end he got depressed. Because he said, this Bob guy just goes on about McLuhan. Everything's McLuhan, 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 McLuhan.
Right.
And he didn't like that. So he went home depressed, though I didn't know it. And so then he tells me the next day when I talked to him on the phone. But Gamma, so I go to bed at 5. Gamma comes back there the next day from 2 to 6. Now he, Gamma does from 2 to 6 with a local clientele. You know what I mean? Well, what the hell? This is not going to be public. So so he's a small time, or he's a dope dealer or a hash dealer.
Oh, okay.
So from 2 to 6, he's there at his office.
Right.
Which is that place, the Martian Embassy.
Right.
And people come in and get their hash. And all the time, the audio wallpaper is Zappa. Constantly. Nothing but Zappa. Zappa bootlegs, the Muffin
wow.
Men. Just constant Zappa. So here I am in this perfect Zappa zone, getting fucking Zappa all the time. Probably getting a little stoned from the hash residue, right? And I go outside, and it's 22 Osney Avenue,
right.
And it's a purple door.
Wow.
And right beside it, two doors down, is a green door, the two Bob and Zappa colors, purple and green. It's like a total hologram. It's like Xenarchy. I go in this place, 22, nothing but Zappa. And so he's a fan of Robert Anton Wilson. So he does know, he knows a bit about Church of Genius, but not about much about me. So we have a lot of interesting, wacky dialogue, you know. And he's a stoned out, Ben would say, alcoholic and brain dead. Not brain dead, but very creative poet who's addled by too much alcohol.
Right.
But he's pretty funny talking to him.
Mine and Ben's age?
He's probably older.
Oh.
He's okay. A science fiction freak, into Rudy Rucker and did science fiction conventions. So he's an interesting guy. So... It's the next, it's, I guess I flew Friday and Thursday. So I sleep in, because I get to bed at 5, and then I get up around 1, and he comes at 2.
Right.
And so I decide to leave around 3. So I want to go see my World Reports guy.
Yep.
And this is a guy, he's like the new Dr. Beter.
Yep.
So I don't know him, and so I say, well, it's Friday afternoon, maybe this will work. So I walk down there, and just before I get to his area, which is in the rich area of near Westminster Parliament Buildings, he's on Horse Ferry Road, Horse Ferry Lane or something, and I walk along, and there's the headlines. And in England, they write out on a piece of paper the headlines. It's like a separate slab of paper, and it says Prince Philip. Ambulance takes Prince Philip to the hospital. I go, yay! That's a good fucking sign. He's same age as me, born in 1922. He's 86.
Wow.
So I look at the newspaper, and he collapsed. And they had to take him to the hospital. And the other one is 5,000 subway users stranded for 3 hours.
Wow.
And that's happening after I get to London. So the media ecology is starting, right?
Whoa.
And so I see those two signs. Ah, this is going to work. I'm going there Friday afternoon. Big executive. Why would he be in his office after 5 o'clock? You know, on Friday afternoon, they're going to go off for the weekend. But I said, "Fuck it, he's probably going to be there because look at all these signs that are pointing to me. Xenocrine signs, right?"
Right.
So I buzz the door. He intercom says, yeah, who is it? What do you want? And I said, I'm here to get, I want to buy some Leo Wanda documents that the Reagan Library just released. And he says, okay, I'll be down in a minute. So it takes about 6 or 7 minutes to come down, probably because he had to gather the papers. So he opens the door, and there's a big, burly, nice-looking British WASP guy with white hair. And he hands them to me, and I said, how much is this? And he said, 10 quid, which was good compared to what was on his website. So I give him 10 quid, and then he goes, how come you didn't make an appointment? And I said to him, why should I make an appointment? Maybe I just went, why should I make an appointment? He looks at me and goes, come on in. So that's what he did. So he went in, and he says, I can only talk for 15 minutes. So he went up to his office. An hour and a half later, his daughter calls, just back from Israel. Dad, where are you? He says, I'm in an important meeting. I'll get back to you.
The same like with Frank.
Yeah. You've got Angela, what's her name? It played...
D'Angelo.
Yeah, what's her first name? Beverly D'Angelo. Frank, Beverly's upstairs. Fuck
hey,
you, Bob's here.
Get her out of here.
So then an hour later, which means 2.5 hours into this 15-minute talk, his wife calls. Yeah. Wife goes, where the hell are you? He says, listen, I'll get back to you in about half an hour. I'm in an important meeting. So we go for another half hour. We go 3 fucking hours. Now, I'm not going to go into all the details.
Good.
But,
we gotta give me.
But I'll tell you another story later about the incredible what happened as a result of that meeting. I'll tell you later, okay?
Good.
But it was a sign of what's going on. And so then Ben's busy on the weekend, so I go see this young kid, Robert Bridge. He then introduced me in the evening to a poet who takes me all around London, shows me where Ezra Pound, Lewis, and everybody lived.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic tour. And then on Sunday, I go down to Hyde Park. That's an interesting
experience. And I didn't watch it, but I saw the link on the...
You got to watch it, Jerry.
I got to watch it.
Can you watch YouTube on the library?
No.
Okay, that's all right.
I could, but I don't have the time.
No, it's not, it's like slow, right?
No, it's fast. It's watchable.
You got to watch this one. When we do it, maybe at Bonnie's, we can show you this one. But, okay, back to what I was saying. So then Monday, I go over to Ben for another long day session. He's got time, you know, so we spend all day. And so by the end of the day, he's all excited again. We had a great day. Then he says, you know, Bob, I didn't tell you this, but I got depressed the other day because you had McClellan. But now I see, I didn't know this about McClellan. So I was telling him all this different stuff, and
right.
He started to realize, holy shit, my image of McClellan is totally wrong.
Right.
I didn't know this.
Right.
And so he says, you know, Bob, we gotta get on the radio. He might have even said that the first day.
Right.
But I think on Monday... He had set it up, and he was trying to figure out how we'd get more than the hour, because he knew we'd have to go on for hours.
Right.
And he thought he'd get the next shows. Then, at the last minute, he found out that we could do it Tuesday night for 3 hours.
Jeez.
So then I go, and on Tuesday I meet with Simon Prentice, who, when I emailed him, he said he wasn't going to be in London. But then, at the last minute, he emailed me and said, hey, I'm going to be here. Let's get together.
Uh-huh.
So he, I guess he came over and picked me up. And then we went up to Hampstead Heath and looked over the city. It's a beautiful view.
Oh, yeah.
Ben and Esther say that's their favorite place.
Wow.
And it's this beautiful park, so we're looking over all London. And so then we started talking about Zappa, and he couldn't fucking believe about the Rumpelstiltskin thing. He'd figured out the Redunzo thing. So we had all this incredible meeting of the minds over Zappa, and he was so excited.
And it's not... Ben's not there.
No, it's just me and Simon.
You and Simon.
Yeah.
Simon.
Simon says that he finds it hard to talk to Ben, you know,
because
they're so different on some political level or something.
Yeah.
So we're talking. We have this amazing meeting up on the mountain, and he's so excited. He takes me back to his home, which he has a nice home in Hampstead Heath.
Oh, yeah.
This is where the celebrities live, the wealthy people.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been there.
And he shows me some of the correspondence with Frank when he was translating the Japanese.
Oh, my God. He's got to copy that and get it somewhere else because if it burns down.
I know.
Did he say he's got a copy?
But those are other details we'll get into later.
Talk to him at some point and just say, you better get safety copies.
Well, he probably did that. Anyways, okay. He starts showing me examples of what's this, where he would say, Frank, you said this means this, but what's this mean? You know. So he asked about, he showed me the part where it says short toads of the little forest, what is it, toads of the short forest? And he says, what are the toads or something about, what's the meaning of this phrase or toads? And Frank writes back, isotopes. No. He says something vague like, it's elementary or something. So he, Simon writes back, well, what's that mean? And he writes back, like, be more particular. He writes back, isotope. I see this and I go, fucking bingo, that proves my chart. I've got subatomic physics in my chart, which is based on Zappa's mythology.
Codes equals isotopes.
Isotopes. And I said, and I started telling him about, I got all excited. I said, my God, this is what a day we're having. We're putting together these two missing schools of information, right?
Right.
And then he started showing me the correspondence, and got isotope in there, which, he, of course, he didn't know what the fuck that meant. You know, why, how's a toad an isotope? But I said, that's a merger of first and second nature. That's all my whole thesis, blah, blah, blah. And so I said, well, thanks for showing me that. And then we looked at a couple others that were pretty good. But he got so excited. And then we decided to go see Richard Barbrook, who's done a really good book on McLuhan. He had an art show. So we go to the art show, and then, but in the meantime, we call Ben and say, we're going to, can Simon be on the radio show? And he said, yes. So we have to pick up Ben at 10. So we go to the art show, see Barbrook, then we go and pick up Ben, and we pick up Gamma, and then we go on the radio for 3 hours. And you can hear that on the web. Okay? So that's good. So then, the next day, I go see Richard Barbrook, which was a good story. I'll tell you about that. And then the next day, I see Sue and her son. They visit London. They're passing through. The son's coming through from Spain, where he'd been for a couple of years as an exchange student. And then the next day, I go to Cambridge, just to go look at Cambridge.
Yeah.
Before I go, Ben calls me up, and he says, are you seeing anybody in Cambridge? I says, no. He says, well, I want you to meet my professor. See, I found out that Ben is a Wyndham Lewis scholar.
He is?
Yeah, as well as Joyce, but Wyndham Lewis.
But I thought he was Theodore Adorno.
Oh, yeah, no, Lewis is a big factor. He got into Lewis when he was 22, and he wrote a paper on it. And I got the paper. Anyways, so he says, I want you to go see my professor in Cambridge, who was my mentor and guy we talked to. I did my paper for on Wyndham
Lewis.
What's his name? Ian Patterson. So I said, great. So I go see Ian, and I won't go into details to do it somewhere else. That's incredible synchronicity.
Yeah.
And I've got Sheila Watson's PhD thesis to show people or talk about. Then I come back. We go to Finnegan's Wake Society meeting. And you know that book, The Outline of Drafts, the chronology of Joyce, how he writes everything. They now know when he did which part.
James Joyce wrote Finnegan's
Wake,
that book?
Yeah. You've seen that. Well, halfway through the seminar, I said, wait a minute, I recognize your name, the professor leading it. And I said, you were in that book. He said, yeah. And I said, yeah, I think you did a good essay. His name's Wim somebody.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's a whole interesting encounter that Ben taped, and it's on the next thing. We got into a big fight, quote,
Ben
fight.
Ben go to the Finnegan's Wake reading
group? Yeah, Ben and I come back from Cambridge, meet Ben at the Finnegan's Wake group. Esther was going to come, but she had to look.
Once a month or once a week?
Maybe once a month. I don't know how often they do it.
Okay.
And so we had a great thing. It was taped. A fight broke out between me and Ben's friend and Wim and those guys opposite each other. And we played some of it on the record. An intellectual fight. But I'll tell you about that later. Next day, I meet Alan Munton, the head Wyndham Lewis scholar, with Paul Edwards. They run the Wyndham Lewis thing. He has a whole seminar on Lewis at the Tate Britain, and new knowledge about Lewis. It's wonderful. So then it turns out Alan knows Ben, knew him in the poetry scene. Ben had gone down to Plymouth University. So we get Alan to come over to the Martian Embassy, and we have a little, the friends of Ben have a little music group. They played music, we talked, and Ben taped it all and put it on a show later, or segments of it. The next day, I go see Alan Munton, and he shows me the other Wyndham Lewis stuff that the previous pope that we'd poet before didn't show me, you know what I mean? So that, and then we go, and Alan, we go to the restaurant after, and he says, so Bob, after we talked a lot, he says, so Bob, what do you do, Bob? He never looked back. I mean, he's gone now. I mean, he went through the fucking vanishing point.
Right.
In other words, Lewis, what Lewis did, he met the new Lewis. Because Lewis investigated all this stuff, right? And so I gave him the whole Lewis experience, and he was reduced to being amazed and giggling, back and forth. He didn't know what the fuck. So that was fun. And So he sent me an email the other day saying, Bob, when do you come back? We're looking forward to seeing you again. So I did Alan. Then I met this kid and saw Bucky, who is the ambassador for the Republic of Texas.
Yeah.
There's a gang down there that says Texas never should have joined the United States, didn't join, it got stolen, and they're determined to make Texas its own country again, right? And this guy, Bucky, went into an apartment. It's the most filthy apartment I've ever been in. he's an interesting guy. He was totally impressed that I'd met Chris Story, the World Reports guy, who invited me in because I didn't have an appointment. Because he said, I've been trying to talk to Chris Story for years, but nobody can get to him. So Bucky is an interesting guy. So then, I met him the week before. Now I'm meeting Bucky after Alan Munton. He leaves at 3:00 to go back to Plymouth. Then I meet Bucky at a tavern. That's another story. And he takes me talking about all this stuff. And then we go to Hyde Park, and that's when we got the Manic guy on. Well, you haven't seen it. Then the next day, then I go to Ben's and say goodbye and spend the last night with Ben and Esther, and some ESP happens there, I'll tell you later. And then, which Ben discusses on a show a few weeks later, then he's so impressed with this whole thing. He says, his brother happened to come into his area, totally fluke. So he says, you got to meet Bob. So we go over to the tavern to meet his brother, and as we talk, after a while, Ben says to his brother, I forget his name, he says, let's say it's Raymond or something, Raymond, I know you're thinking I invented this guy. And Raymond says, yes. Like, I totally confirm Ben's reality versus his brother's reality. My brother's very straight. He's a curator for a hoity-toity art world or something. And so, you know, there's that conflict. Ben's underground. But Ben's reality, that guy probably thinks is nuts. Well, I'm so much Ben's reality from Ben's point of view that that was a joke. He was presenting me to his brother.
Right.
And his brother knew the professor of the Finney's Wake thing and was interested in what we thought because he'd been part of that. And but it's just beautiful way Ben said, yeah, I know Raymond, you think that I invented this guy. It's like a total figment of his imagination that proves Ben, right? So that was great. That was a great ending. So then we went back, and that's when the ESP happened. Then we said goodbye. Then I flew the next day and watched I'm Not There twice. Two more fucking times going back, and I've got it down. So then I do. I'll wrap this up. Basically, in what happened in Halifax, is that Brendan, her son, is a very good musician because their grandfather was a very good big swing band guy in Halifax. He goes to Spain a couple years ago as an exchange student, and while he's there, he writes a song. Which includes the geography place names of this area in Spain. Maybe it's the Basque area, I'm not sure. So he goes to a festival, 2,000 or 3,000 people. He sings this song. They go fucking nuts that somebody's singing about their names and their place names in their area, right? It becomes, quote, a national anthem. And like, I don't know how big, but it becomes a big deal. It gets on it's played on the YouTube or on the radio or something. So Germany gets wind of this. EMI, one of those corporations, gets in touch with them. They like it. So they sign them up. They take them to Germany. They make a big video, and it's all over German TV. They sign three fucking albums, and then he goes back to Spain. But while I was in London, he was going back to Nova Scotia, so he met Sue in London. So I got to meet Brendan. Now, I met him when he was 15 in high school. You know, met him.
David
you met
Williams
Brendan.
And Jenny and Susie, we all met him,
Yeah, when he was in my high school age.
Yep.
And when he was 11, he came to New York and I walked him around with Sue, showed him New York. But he never really spent time with me.
Yeah.
And so Sue wanted me to, he's 22 now, right?
Yeah.
So we get together in London and that's fun in the evening. And then I go back to Halifax. And I end up staying at Sue's house at one point. Oh, yeah, she picks him at the airport. They pick me up at the airport. And I stay overnight at their place. Interesting things happen. Then the next day we're getting up, and I'm having breakfast. Sue's feeding me. And he puts on his album, which I haven't heard. But he's told me a lot about his personal life in London the week before and about three girlfriends he had, two in the past and one he has now. So I start listening to the album, and I recognize the names of his girlfriends. So I just start bouncing and making commentary. He runs in the other room, gets a fucking computer, brings it out, and starts filming him with his computer, right? So it goes on for over half an hour. I'm bouncing and making commentary, and he's laughing, and it just keeps going. And so when we finish, he says, you know, I got friends in the music industry who say, so-and-so reviewed me, you know, my album, then some writer.
Right.
He says, it's all boring. They're all just got writers. I'm going to use this as my review. Here is Bob Dodd reviewing my fucking album. I'm putting it up on YouTube. You know what I mean?
Is it up there now?
No, not yet. Yeah. So it's really good. At one point, Sue, who looks like the perfect trophy wife, she's going around cooking. And she sits down. She's bouncing. And at one point, I turned to her. I said, this is Carolyn Wheeler. I say, this is my wife, Carolyn Wheeler. She's a small town in British Columbia. I say that to show how whacked out I was as I was hallucinating off the album. So I'm making up all this shit. And he's so excited. Later that day, he's got the thing going. He's transcribing all that I say, because some of it you can't hear because of the music. And so he's going to put it on YouTube, and you're going to be able to read what I said beside it. So it's really good. And so then at the end of it, he says, I didn't tell you this before, right?
No.
So at the end of it, he says, because I've told this to so many fucking people that I had to, going back in hell of it. I can't remember who I've told what to who, right? And so at the end of it, we finished the album, and he's thinking, he says, you seem to be able to dance, Bob. And I said, yeah. He said, let me tape you dancing to some of the cuts. So we did five songs, and I danced to each one of them, and he loved them, and he's going to send them to his company. He says, this is what my video is going to be. Bob dancing to my fucking shit. Now, of course, they'll freak. They won't want this old bland chartered accountant guy. But he says, look, all the videos are the same. This would be so unique, so different. And so he's hoping that they'll take one of them. But he's going to put them up on YouTube anyways. You know what I mean? I mean, if I don't know if it matters with them or... They're eventually going to get to YouTube. They'll be seen at some point, which I love because I've always wanted to be seen tape dancing. You tried it in 91 at my place in Toronto, and it turned out real dark. We couldn't see it, right?
Yeah, no, some of it's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't... around the Bob's Media Ecology dance video.
Oh, yeah, I'm floating in a bubble. Yeah, but it's just sort of like that. Yeah. So this turned out really good. It's on good camera,
quality, yeah.
Good quality, and five different versions. I imagine some of it's pretty good. And so I was really happy to finally get on tape, you know. So,
so he's very successful.
The day that he's taping me, they get a call from the local CBC. He's nowhere in North America. No one knows him. CBC calls him, and some guy has been doing this for 30 years in Halifax, does a local show. Hey, I heard your album. I really like it. I heard your previous album, a little small sampler, a year or so ago. You've really grown a lot, and I want you to have you on. So he did a show, and it's on. It was done all over Atlantic Canada, maybe Canada. I don't know.
Right.
So he got on there and did a good interview, did a whole show on him. But right now, he went back to England because his girlfriend's in Wales. So he's gonna try to get a job there and hang out with her, and then make the other two albums. But he doesn't have a lot of money right now,
See.
So he's not just beginning potentially successful.
Is it pop or rock or?
He's a crooner.
So it's like
it's totally unique.
Frank Sinatra-ish?
Not really. It's totally unique. I brought the album home to New York, started listening to it, find out what the hell I was commenting on, you know, and. I've listened to his album every night for 2.5 weeks before I go to bed. Carolyn does. I love the album. It's really fucking neat. And I may like it because it reminds me of a lot of things that happened to Halifax when I was there on this trip. It brings back a lot of memories. I don't know, but any time...
From the 50s or 60s?
Of my life?
Yeah.
No. Of my trip in Halifax the week before.
Oh, from your trip in Halifax.
Yeah. Maybe I like the mood that it reminds me of.
Yeah.
But whenever I played for older people, they all said, man, that guy's only 22. He sounds so old and so mature.
Yeah.
Everybody's impressed.
Yeah.
I mean, just a young guy, you know.
Yeah. Well, I bet you Sue's proud.
Yeah, and in a young, innocent face, you know. His voice is pretty good for communicating and all these little nuances. So someday you should hear it. You can go to his website and catch some of the samples. So I think that's... Then I'm back. Now Mary. We'll end with Mary. So I call up Mary. She emails me right with time I get back. She says, call me. I finished my taxes. Let's talk. So we get talking. And I'm catalyzing one thing after other. She gets so fucking excited. She says, I've wanted to move to Hawaii for 3 years. Oh, yeah. The day I went to see Chris Story, the World Report's CIA guy, quote CIA person. He works for the Queen. Like Peter. That day, April 4th, is the day Corinne died. So I'm back, I'm talking to Mary, and she's telling me about what happened when she went to the funeral and all that. And, of course, they get money because the estate was settled, right? And so she got new money. So she says, I wanted to move to Hawaii for the last 3 years. Marshall liked Hawaii. I think that'd be a great place for the Marshall McLuhan Center. I've got money now. I'm going to Maui with you.
Wow.
And I'm going to make you president and CEO of this thing. And she has, she has Kissinger calls her once a month. Vince Cerf, who invented half the internet, calls her every other Sunday. Anyways, it's just her connections are incredible. She told me that Jack Nicholson and Warren Beatty, like back in the 80s, would go to the beach and read McLuhan.
Wow.
So she knows everybody and everything. And so as time went on, we got some new ideas, new things, new projects. And then when she saw the Harold Channer thing the other day, the Donald Thiel tribute, she says, Bob, you are fucking amazing. I am going to get, you should be on 60 Minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Yeah. And then she said, but I'm going to get you on Charlie Rose. He's a friend of mine.
Oh, my God, that's got to happen.
No, it probably won't happen. It doesn't matter.
No, it won't happen, but
it's her excitement. I'm just showing her excitement. She's so happy about what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so it's just been snowballing.
That's super.
So, just going to put Carol on the board, there's other things. So that's the story, Jared.
Good,
so,
now we can switch over
no. So here's the synchronicity. The finals with Mary.
Okay.
We're still going.
Good.
Yeah,
you can finish this.
Yeah. So she lives on in Ashland at an address 696 Normal Avenue. And she ain't normal, though she has an image of being normal.
Yeah.
And to get her corporate fund, you go to her website, man. It's like the Bilderbergers funder.
I mean, really?
Yeah, she's raised $25 million since like the early 80s. She formed her company with the top law firm and one of the powerful ones. Shirley Hofstadler was the Secretary of Education under Carter.
Uh-huh.
She called her up one day to introduce herself in 81. Walter Cronkite was in the office. She gets talking to Shirley and Walter. They get so inspired, they incorporate or form the McLuhan Center right then in 1981 on the phone. So Shirley's been her mentor.